The votes have not yet been cast in Russia's March presidential election, but already it's abundantly clear that Vladimir Putin will enjoy a second term in office in the Kremlin. There are 8 candidates on the March 14th ballot, but with the Russian president enjoying an approval rating of 73%, and with many of the country's top politicians choosing to sit out the race, the only real drama hinges on whether turnout will reach the 51% required to validate the electoral process. So will the elections prove the strengths or limits of Russia's democracy? Common Ground's Simon Marks reports from Moscow.
In a downtown Moscow cafe not far from the Kremlin, a new portrait of Vladimir Putin is being unveiled. It is made entirely of rich, dark Russian chocolate and almost seems at risk of melting under the lights above it. It's on sale to members of Russia's Nouveau Riche for around $700. The artist, Vitaly Ponomaryov, insists it's a tribute to Russia's leader, not part of a growing personality cult around him.
I don't think I am contributing to this. What I like about Putin is that he can unite so many people around him. We're not drawing this just to sell it. This is to express what we feel.
But the chocolate portrait is, say some Russians, by far the sweetest thing about the Russian president. Over the past year, while the world's attention was focused on Iraq, he has moved aggressively to consolidate his power base here and increasingly surround himself with advisers who, like the president himself, once worked for the KGB. And no one felt the power of the presidency more than Russia's most successful businessman, oil baron Mikhail Khodorkovsky, former head of the conglomerate Yukos. On October the 26th last year, Mr. Khodorkovsky was suddenly arrested and bundled into a police car during a routine business trip to Siberia. He's been in jail ever since, accused of fraud and tax evasion, charges he denies. Attorney Karina Moskalenko, who spent the past 3 decades representing victims of human rights abuses, first in the Soviet Union, now in Russia, today is also representing Mr. Khodorkovsky.
I've worked as an attorney in this country for 26 years, in the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s. And I want to tell you that my clients never have the feeling of hopelessness that they have now. People feel more and more unprotected from the tyranny of the authorities. And, you know, this is a very unpleasant signal to society.
The Russians argue that Mr. Khodorkovsky is simply a crook. They say he became Russia's richest man by expropriating state assets during the Yeltsin-era free-for-all. Then many of the nation's riches were parceled out at giveaway prices by a Kremlin that desperately needed to raise cash. But Mr. Khodorkovsky's arrest has become an important punctuation mark in the history of Vladimir Putin's presidency, because he had gone to great lengths in recent years to legitimize himself and his business operations. He had also slowly been expressing political ambitions and funding some of Russia's reformist opposition leaders, men like Grigory Yavlinsky, who might have run for the presidency this spring had his Yabloko party not been thrown into a deep financial freeze following Mr. Khodorkovsky's arrest.
Simply that event threatened the business to such extent that they're even afraid simply to speak to you after that.
And it isn't just big business that is feeling the growing reach of the Kremlin. Over the past decade, pollsters working for an organization called Vitsyom, the Russian Center for Public Opinion and Research, have become a familiar sight on the streets of Russia, canvassing public opinion in a nation where it never used to count. Headed by sociologist Yuri Levada, whose work in the 70s was banned by the communists, Vitsyom was suddenly reorganized by the current Russian government last year and brought under direct Kremlin control. Others encountering difficulties in the new Russia include defense analyst Igor Sutyagin. He's been jailed for the past 4 years on charges of espionage, though insists the information he revealed was already in the public domain. The Open Society Institute, funded by financier George Soros. Its offices were raided and records seized when Mr. Soros accused the Putin government of persecution. And Otto Lartsis, a prominent reformist journalist who was mysteriously mugged last November. and now says old-style fears are stalking the Russian press.
There's no formal censorship, but I know how my colleagues are now writing their articles. Their inner censor has woken up. It's something that I've been seeing for 50 years in my journalistic career. When you edit yourself even before you start to write, and you know what you cannot write because it will never be published anyway. This is all working again now.
But supporters of the Russian president, who have been dutifully attending campaign rallies, even though the March elections are a foregone conclusion, insist that Vladimir Putin is misunderstood. The president himself is vowing to stay true to a reformist path. He recently told a group of Italian journalists that Russian Democrats and foreign investors have no cause for concern.
What I can tell you for sure is that we will continue to firm up the institution of private property. We will work on protecting the rights of property owners and investors. We will continue market reforms and cement democratic institutions, parties, elections, the electoral system, and so on. All of that, together with the determination of the state to fight corruption and crime, will finally create a normal, investor-friendly climate.
It is that mixture of capitalism with a determined strong state, a dictatorship of law, Mr. Putin once called it, that is proving so popular here. Many Russians seem prepared to trade away a few liberties in exchange for the economic stability that Mr. Putin has brought. They don't penalize the government for the ongoing Russian military occupation of Chechnya. Indeed, the war in the breakaway region is scarcely a public issue in the presidential election campaign, despite recent terrorist attacks in Moscow linked to the war in Chechnya. Managed democracy, the Kremlin calls it, and Putin adviser Sergei Markov defends it.
Managed democracy, it means that combination of democratic institutions and authoritarian institutions, of course, it's clear. Russia now in the process, not from communist dictatorship, but from the stage of Yeltsin anarchy to the functioning democratic institutions. To make situation stable, Kremlin has to use both democratic and not democratic methods.
Others argue that Russian democracy doesn't need managing and that a nation emerging from 70 years of authoritarianism doesn't need any more. Lilia Shevtsova, a political analyst with ties to some of Russia's opposition political parties, says managed democracy is democracy delayed.
When you don't give society opportunity to mature, society will never mature. And in the end, frustrated, unhappy society can become a real threat for the authorities. And we again will come to the same political cycle that Russia has been accustomed to. Bloody revolutions.
Добрый день, уважаемые дамы и господа, коллеги.
In December, shortly before the parliamentary elections took place, and with a degree of fanfare, the Russian government officially welcomed reporters to the Election Commission, which oversees the country's electoral process. Last year, it too underwent a management change. The agency that will run the March presidential elections is now directly accountable to the FSB, the secret police agency that in former times was known as the KGB. For Common Ground, I'm Simon Marks in Moscow.